From Austin, live music capital of the world, this is Texas Music Matters. I'm David Brown. Ray Wiley Hubbard says when he's not picking guitar, you'll find him picking through his bookshelf. But not only is he an avid reader, he's also working on his memoirs. We'll get a sneak peek of sorts when he comes in for a conversation this hour. Also, we'll hear how musicians are still trying to save Austin's musical sister city of New Orleans nearly 8 years after Hurricane Katrina.
The musicians understand better than anybody, because if you go to New Orleans today, the tourist areas have been totally refurbished, whereas the poorest communities are still in ruins.
That story, plus the week's music news, this week in Texas music history, and quite a few surprises. Texas Music Matters gets underway in just a moment. Stay with us.
Texas Music Matters is made possible in part by Lewis Shanks of Texas, offering fine home furnishings since 1945. LewisShanksFurniture.com.
From Studio 3 at KUT and KUTX in Austin, Texas, I'm David Brown, and you've got it tuned to Texas Music Matters. We like to kick off each hour with musical discovery. If you're in Austin, this is a band you may already know. Indeed, the album they've just released you may know as well. At least, most of it, that is. You see, way back in 2006, a then-unknown group called Quiet Company released its first album, Shine Honesty. And then a funny thing happened. The band evolved. Believe it or don't. 7 years and a truckload of Austin Music Awards later, Quiet Company didn't just re-record their first album to make it sound like the band does today. They added a couple of tracks as well, and this is one of them. It's called And You Said It Was Pretty Here, new from Quiet Company on Texas Music Matters.
A pillar of morality. summer, I can't stay stoned in lower heaven where the cellos groan. Beethoven and drown. It's like a mummy in rags. I think it's alright. I'll stick around with you. I'll be a clown for you. I think it's alright. It's just the hate in my brain that makes me go insane. I think it's alright. I'm having fun with you. Stay on the run with you. I think it's alright. Don't ask why. Be pounded down. I got a few in the crown. So I hang my head down. Sidewalks cracked of color chalk. I let my body talk. I think it's alright. I'll stick around with you. I'll be a clown for you. I think it's alright. It's just the hate in my brain that makes me go insane. It's alright. I'm having fun with you. Stay on the run with you. I think it's alright. Don't ask why. Stick around with you. I'll be a clown for you. I think it's alright. It's just the hate in my brain that makes me go insane. I think it's alright. I'm having fun with you. Stay on the run with you. I think it's alright. Don't ask why. I think it's alright. I'll stick around with you. I'll be a clown for you. I think it's alright. It's just the hate in my brain that makes me go insane. I think it's alright. I'm having fun with you. Stay on the run with you. I think it's alright. Don't ask why. Don't ask why. Don't ask why. Don't ask why.
That right there is a remarkable songwriting talent, originally from Lubbock. His new CD is titled Messenger. Jody Perkypile is his name. Of course, that's his real name. His dad, D. Perkypile, used to play in bands with Joe Ely and Jesse Guitar Taylor, among others. Jody Perkypile is the real deal, and you should look him up. Just got a copy of the new edition of Texas Monthly, the cover story, Who Killed the Dixie Chicks? It's an excellent piece by John Spong, but I have to tell you, it certainly leaves you feeling unsettled. I guess that's the right word. In part because, well, as John puts it, it really didn't have to be this way.
I cried, never gonna hold the hand of another guy. Too young for him, they told her, waiting for the love of a traveling soldier.
In 2003, on the eve of war in Iraq, as the Dixie Chicks were at the height of their careers as the best-selling all-female group in history, Natalie Maines dared to speak her mind on a stage at a concert in London. "Just so you know," she said, "we're on the good side with y'all. We don't want this war, this violence. And we're ashamed the President of the United States is from Texas," she was quoted as saying. This is Natalie Maines from an interview in 2006 with NPR.
Just being in London during that whole time before the war, they always grouped Americans together. Like, we all thought the way that the president thought. Yeah, I felt like I just wanted to let those people know, just because we're Americans, and especially from Texas, and play country music, you can't put us in that category. I didn't want them thinking that we believed in that war when we didn't.
When her words were reported in a London newspaper, it triggered a transcontinental firestorm. A ban on Dixie Chicks music by country radio in the U.S., bonfires of Dixie Chicks CDs, a reaction so full of vitriol, members of the group no longer talk about the incident publicly. But bandmate Emily Robison once made an interesting observation. If a guy had said something like that, he would have been an outlaw. The Johnny Cash or Merle Haggard of his generation.
Forgive sounds good. Forgive, I'm not sure I could. They say time heals everything, but I'm still waiting. I'm through. For me to figure out, I've paid a price, and I'll keep paying. I'm not ready to make nice, I'm not ready to back down. I'm still mad as hell, and I don't have time to go round and round and round. It's too late.
Postscript, March 2013. Natalie Maines is set to release a solo album in a couple of months. Emily Robison and Marty McGuire have a side project, the Courtyard Hounds. And as for the Dixie Chicks, well, it's reported that last summer they recorded an album together in Austin. But as of the moment, there are no plans to release it. The Dixie Chicks have a few shows scheduled in Canada this summer, but nothing else after that. As of last month, with more than 30 million records sold, the Dixie Chicks remain the top-selling all-female band of the biggest country group in the U.S., wherever they are. You're listening to Texas Music Matters. Stay with us. From Austin, I'm David Brown, and this is Texas Music Matters.
I'm Gary Hartman with the Center for Texas Music History at Texas State University in San Marcos. This week in Texas Music History, we'll go on the air with a pioneer in Spanish language radio. On March 17, 1966, KEDA-AM began broadcasting in San Antonio. The station was the brainchild of Manuel Gonzalez Davila Sr. Since the 1920s, Davila had been buying airtime on San Antonio's English-language stations in order to offer limited programming in Spanish. The 1966 launch of KEDA gave him the chance to provide a full-time Spanish-language format. Soon he was managing a group of popular Spanish-language stations that came to be known as the Jalapeño Network. Through his radio stations, Davila helped promote several generations of Texas-Mexican artists, from Narciso Martinez and Santiago Jimenez Sr. to Selena and Emilio. Manuel Davila died in 1997, but his family continued operating KEDA until Claro Communications purchased it in 2011. Davila's son, Ricky, the Wolfman Jack of San Antonio, signed off for the last time on July 29th, 2011. Next time on This Week in Texas Music History, we'll meet the Crown Prince of Dallas Fiddlers. This Week in Texas Music History is made possible in part with support from Humanities Texas.
Time for a quick review of the week's music news. We call this our sound check.
Hey, Shell, you know it's kind of funny.
File under Shocked. At a performance in San Francisco Sunday, the alt-folk singer Michelle Schacht went on an anti-gay rant that cleared the room and may have ended her career. Not one is seen on the conservative side of many socio-political issues. The Dallas-born UT alum has aligned herself with such causes as the Occupy movement, for example. Schacht used a pejorative term for homosexuals and said she lives in fear of same-sex marriage. Fans have questioned whether she was being serious with her comments. Schacht later tweeted, quote, "Truth is leading to painful confrontation." The number of arrests in downtown Austin during South by Southwest was dramatically down compared to last year. That's according to preliminary figures gathered by the Austin Chronicle. While the total number may rise slightly after complete figures for this Sunday are tallied, early stats from the downtown area detail 126 arrests this year. That's down from 224 last year. South by Southwest has just announced the first annual Grolke Prize, an honor named for former South by creative director Brent Grolke, who passed away unexpectedly last year. Roland Swenson is South by's executive director.
We were looking for acts that took advantage of the opportunity and made the most of it. And the criteria was, we thought, would Brent have liked this? Would Brent have been proud of this?
The inaugural recipients of the Grolke Prize in the category of developing U.S. artists, three sisters from the San Fernando Valley who play music under their last name, Hyam. Best non-U.S. developing artist, Glaswegian group Churches. And the career award went to those guys who live just north of the Texas border a bit, the Flaming Lips.
Now. test is over.
The Flaming Lips, recipients of the South by Southwest Grilke Prize honoring career achievement. If you read a lot of music journalism, you may know the name John Swenson. He's been writing about popular music since the late 60s. He's worked as an editor at Crawdaddy, Rolling Stone, Circus, virtually every popular music magazine of note at one time or another. He's also the author of an award-winning book, which has recently been released in paperback. It's titled New Atlantis, and it focuses on Austin's musical sister city to the east of us. Swenson says nearly 8 years after Katrina, musicians are still battling for the survival of New Orleans.
When Katrina happened, the city was depopulated, and there was a great concern that we had lost the music with the neighborhoods that created it.
Indeed, a lot of musicians actually came to Houston and Austin.
A lot of them. And that's sort of, there's, I was doing a reading the other night at Baker Street, and I read from parts of the book that are about the musicians who moved to Austin, and Cyril Neville being one of them. Mm-hmm. Who spent a good deal of time here.
Yeah,
I became obsessed with everybody's story about returning to the city and what it meant to them and what they had to go through to do it, and mostly the fact that they realized that the music they played didn't have the same relationship to a place like Portland, Oregon, or wherever they had been very graciously hosted while they were out of town. It just they couldn't get to their roots of what playing music meant to them, because it was part of the community. So they had to go back to New Orleans, and they had to restore this culture in order to recreate the context that their music exists in.
And I guess that's why New Atlantis. Of course, there's the original book by that title by Sir Francis Bacon, which is about an idyllic island.
Well, there's also the idea that New Orleans could disappear at any moment, as the original Atlantis did, and that nobody would believe that it existed once it was gone when people told stories about it. Without music, New Orleans is just another city in the Bible Belt. I mean, it's obviously been a great port for the last quarter millennium. It predates the United States as an important city.
I guess I'm wondering, could New Orleans have rebuilt without the musicians?
It could have rebuilt, but it would have been more like Las Vegas or something like that.
Now, it's interesting because I was trying to drive this point because Cyril Neville himself, not that long ago, before he had gone back permanently to New Orleans, said, you know, they've turned it into a Disneyland.
Once you depopulate a city, the people that are coming back are middle-class people and people who want to be part of something that's starting from scratch, which is a very interesting new element of what's going on there. Cyril called it an ethnic cleansing, and I do think that it was the last bit of the African diaspora. People brought here in slavery, and then when they were freed, many of them became sharecroppers in the area, or moved to New Orleans, where they built houses. And when the flood came and destroyed all their homes, some of them didn't have proof of ownership because they had built. There was no deed. They built the house. Their grandfathers built the house themselves. These people they lost their homes. They're dispossessed. It's the final stage of the diaspora. If you go to New Orleans today, the tourist areas have been totally refurbished, whereas the poorest communities are still in ruins. It's been essential in sort of reshaping the brand as a tourist destination.
The narrative post-Katrina, at least as it now stands in 2013, is that New Orleans has come back from the brink.
It's come back from the brink, but it hasn't been totally saved yet in terms of the culture, because if there's not a new generation of young people to pick up the mantle of this culture, it will die. I mean, a lot of the older people who were involved in it have returned because they realize that what they do has to happen in New Orleans. But without the communities to nurture it, and the schools to teach the kids. The future remains an open question because it's about the children and the next generation of players. That's what will tell us whether the culture survives or not.
It's an award-winning book. It's called New Atlantis. The author is John Swenson, one of the doyens of music journalism, I think it's safe to say. Thank you very much for taking time to come and visit us.
Oh, I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
This weekend, members of the band Galactic are staging a concert in New Orleans to raise funds to help former frontman Terrell Houseman Desclouet move back home. He's been living in Chicago since Katrina devastated his Holly Grove neighborhood in the summer of 2005. Coming up, a Texas music legend and the book he's writing, plus a little lanyap as Texas Music Matters continues. From Austin, this is Texas Music Matters. I'm David Brown. With the record industry in disarray, musicians have been looking for other ways to augment their income and ways that'll permit them to keep doing what they love, making music. Many struggle to get in front of filmmakers or video game companies because soundtracks and licensing deals can go a long way. Well, David Wingo has sort of got things the other way around. He's already a highly sought-after Austin-based soundtrack composer. Wingo has yearned for another outlet, however, a real band where he can express himself without compromise. Well, that band has finally taken shape. Colin Switek on guitars, Matt Clark on bass, David Hobazal on drums, David Wingo on vocals and guitar. He calls this Ola Podrida.
Well, because as I'm making my living doing film scores, which I'm extremely fortunate to have that. Working on my own stuff is just such a different thing. It's such a different creative outlet, working on your own things where you make every decision. You don't have anyone to answer to. You can decide the instrumentation. You can decide everything. It's an open canvas that I don't ever have for film. And they're both creatively satisfying to equal degrees, but in very different ways. But I really value that time to be able to satisfy that other part of me.
ideas. Brings out all the contours of your face. Feel I haven't seen in years. Light another cigarette. Pass it over here. Smoke in the TV glow. Watch it disappear. I'll have another beer. Take you out, we'd blow everyone away. And if you like to dance, you'd show me how, but you don't, and I won't. So what do you say? Let's just stay in tonight. Let's just stay in our
recorded live to tape at Austin's Big Orange. That's Ola Podrida from the new album Ghosts Go Blind, a song called Staying In on Texas Music Matters. It's already getting strong reviews from national media, including Spin Magazine, one to watch. I am told that legend is an overused word, but it certainly suits Ray Wiley Hubbard. The telltale sign is not just the reverence that younger songwriters have for him, but also his own humility despite his reputation. Just a couple of weeks ago, out of the blue, Ray Wiley Hubbard got a call from the office of a well-known admirer, wanted him to come to New York City, be on his TV show.
Yes, Keith Case, who is my agent there in Nashville, and he gets a phone call and it says, "This is Jennifer from Worldwide Pants, and Dave would like to know if Ray would do his TV show."
That's Dave Letterman.
Dave Letterman, yeah. Well, that's what Keith didn't know that. He just said, if do Dave's TV show on January 9th, I think Keith said, "Dave who?" And she said, "Well, Dave Letterman." And so Keith went, "Well, let me make sure he's not doing a happy hour gig in Waco that day," because that was really hard to reschedule. So, and then she said, "And Dave would like Ray to sing the song, Mother Blues." And so he actually requested the song, and he said, "The only thing is, we got like 3 minutes and 35 seconds because of the time frame between commercials." So that meant I had to cut out a couple of verses. But that was, it's kind of one of those things, as someone asked me, 66 and that kind of late to be make your first appearance on David Letterman, and I kind of said, well, I don't want to peak too soon.
Well, you know? I'm not going to ask you to shorten it up, but I would love to hear Mother Blues, okay, if you're of the mind.
Oh, I'd love to.
Ray Wiley Hubbard on Texas Music Matters.
I was a young man about 21 years old, y'all. All I wanted was a stripper girlfriend and a gold top Les Paul. Be careful of the things you wish for. You might get them. There was a nightclub in Dallas. It's called Mother Blues. It's where Lightning Hopkins played and Freddie King even paid some dues. All the dealers and gamblers and young white hipsters, they all made the scene. The girl at the door who checked IDs was just 16. It was not a place for law-abiding citizens. Jackie Jones had him a habit, he just couldn't stop. Said, give me $500, I sell you my Les Paul gold top. I drove my daddy's car down to Ross Avenue and I sold it. I guess I should have told him, he alluded to the police that someone stole it. It was just the first of many bad decisions I was to make for the next 20 years. Oh, but I had me a guitar. It's 2 a.m. and everybody's gone but the band, the dealers, and Jazz Jones. Then the girls from the Landing Strip Club come over after they put their clothes back on. So I'm at my blues, I'm sitting on an amp, I'm playing Twist and Shout. And this tall drink of water walk in, little lass, you might have to shoot a way out. She come up to me, she said, you know anything good on that guitar? I didn't say nothing, I just kept on playing. She said, have you ever heard this song called Poke Salad Annie? I just kept on playing. She said, every time I hear that song, my insides feel like warm butter and I just want to take off my clothes and dance around in my underwear. I said, down in Louisiana, where the alligator grows so mean. Whoa, that's all I knew of it. But it was enough. So me and this dancer, we hit it off like a metaphor. Like a metaphor for a hydrogen bomb. We was enriched uranium, supercritical mass. We was a chain reaction. Here was love and lust, mostly lust, but a mutual attraction. So there I was, boys, at 21 years old. I had it all. I had a fine stripper girlfriend and a gold top Les Paul. Ah, the future. Oh, it looked promising. Ah, but there were dark clouds on the horizon. She was a beautiful girl, but she liked to drink tequila. Oh, and that ain't all. I come home 4 or 5 times and she pawned my Les Paul. So we broke up and she went to Hollywood. She married her an actor. She got a job dancing on the Hudson Brothers TV show and Marlon Lister for Max Factor. Well, I'm glad she'd done all right. I got over eventually. I'm glad she'd done all right. Yes, I am. But now me, well, I never busted through the gates into the big time as a rock and roll star. For 40 years, I just carried around an old gold top guitar. But love and fate are mysterious things in this funky old world. It was 23 years ago, I ended up marrying that Mother Blues door girl. We had us a boy, and he 19 years old now, and he playing guitar, and he ended up with my Les Paul gold top. Now, I don't know if my son gonna hang his life on a guitar or not, but I'm very grateful for the time that I get to share the stage with him. I'm very grateful to that I'm still writing these old songs and traveling around and playing them and people coming out to hear me play them. And I'm very grateful for KUT for playing me every now and then. And you know, the days that I keep my gratitude higher than my expectations, I have really good days.
The one and only Ray Wiley Hubbard.
We would hope there's only one of me.
Man, I'll tell you. But, of course, you mentioned your son in the song.
Yeah, yeah.
He's playing guitar.
Yeah, he was on the Letterman Show with me, and he's going to school down at Texas State.
And you mentioned that you're not sure if he's going to hang his hat on the guitar or whatever. You think he's leaning that direction or no?
Well, he likes being in the band. He likes being a side guy. He really, you know, I thought one time I asked him, I said, you like playing with me? And he said, oh, yeah, man, I love playing the music and everything. And I said, well, then what I have to pay you? And he said, I'll play the music for free, but you got to pay me to ride in a van with you and a bunch of old guys. So, and he doesn't like get nervous like when we did Grit and Groove 2 years ago and had Joe Walsh. And Joe Walsh came out and did Snake Farm with us and was playing guitar. And Lucas just, you know, Joe would take eight bars, and then Lucas take eight bars, just standing there toe to toe. So,
man,
you know,
that's so cool.
Yeah, and after it's over, he just said, "Hey, I'm going home." I said, "Just
well, that's
he's not, I guess, impressed with like stardom and everything. He just level-headed kid. I hope."
Well, you mentioned Grit and Groove Festival, yeah, and the stardom, and man, yeah, the lineup is fantastic. In addition,
oh, yeah,
to yourself, you got this year. This is down at the Whitewater Amphitheater,
yeah,
on the 6th of, yeah, April. Hayes Carl. And yeah, I know you did a lot of work with Hayes over,
yeah,
the years.
Yeah, I was just kind of was down there at the Blanco River. I just saw him in a little basket in the weeds down there. Just kind of, and,
yeah,
and then I took him, had a note pinned to him, said, "Take care of him." So, no, I've known Hayes forever, and he's just a great writer. That's the whole thing about the Grit and Groove Festival. I like to have my friends and bands that I really, really like musically.
And the sound, I mean, just looking through this lineup, you got Ben Queller, Dirty River Boys, Wheeler Brothers, Uncle Lucius, the Trishas, Sons of Fathers,
yeah,
and I just listened to Dustin Welch just a few minutes ago. Man, what a lineup.
It is a great lineup, and I'm just, I didn't think they would all say yes, you know, when I called them. I said, "You want to play my festival?" And they did. And like all these bands, like the Wheeler Brothers are just, you know, taking off, and Dirty River Boys are just, you know, smoking everywhere, and Uncle Lucius and Sons of Fathers here. I think the festival is pretty much having friends of mine that are, you know, pretty damn good.
Well, I have to ask too about the name. I mean, Grit and Groove, obviously,
yeah,
anyone who's familiar with your work, they totally understand where you're coming from with Grit,
oh,
and,
yeah,
Groove. But I am curious, I mean, where do you get that, where do you derive that sort of grit and groove in your sound? I mean, was there someone that you were, when you were growing up, you were listening to, and that was just kind of what flipped the switch for you?
Well, I went to high school with Michael Murphy, and he was the first guy that I ever saw come at an assembly, in a high school assembly, and he came out and he said, "This is a song I wrote," and then he played this, I think, Freedom Bird, but it was just, I went, ah, you know, it was just, it was
a light
powerful.
Color.
Yeah, it was like, oh, that's a songwriter. So then I got involved in folk music, and then of course came down to Austin, and there was a great tradition here of kind of Big Bill Moss and Alan Damron and Siegel Fry and Jerry Jeff and Murphy and BW and Rusty Weir. It was just a great, great scene, and it was just kind of, I feel very fortunate that I started off in folk music where the lyrics are so important. And then in my 40s, I got into finger picking, and I remembered, you know, when I was younger, seeing Lightning Hopkins and Mance Lipscomb, and I said, somehow I started listening to that again, and I said, then it just triggered something inside me, like that groove, that Lightning Hopkins dead thumb groove, you know, I said, I've got to do that. And so it's kind of a combination of having folk lyrics, you know, with hopefully some depth and weight, but with kind of a hybrid of Guy Clark and John Lee Hooker. That's kind of where I want to be, you know.
What do you do when you are not playing guitar? What's it like when you're at home and you're sitting back on the couch? You like TV? You listen to the radio? What do you do?
I read a lot.
You really read?
Yeah, I got... I got hooked into mythology, all the Joseph Campbell stuff and all that. And so I'd read a lot, and all of a sudden I've got some friends of mine that are kind of these pulp fiction detective things, you know, John Stanford, who wrote Mad River, which actually mentions me in it, which was a treat to be reading this book and have my name in a book. And then a guy named Frank Bill, who writes these incredibly dark, weird books. And so I do a lot of kind of pulp detective and mythology. That's kind of where I stay as I listen to Lightning Hopkins.
do you ever think about maybe writing a book of your own?
I've actually been working on my memoirs, as a matter of fact, and I've got probably about 3/4 of it done. I've been working on it for the last couple of years. Just mostly they're just kind of goofy road stories.
But the guys you hung with, I mean, about, you know, Weir, who passed away recently,
yeah,
you know, all these cats, Jerry Jeff Walker, all that.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of people would really be fascinated by your story.
I've been putting that together. I've been working on that. So I'm writing primary memoirs, and it's just got some, it's a lot of it's kind of funny, weird road stories, but then some of it's kind of how my life turned around because of Stevie Ray Vaughan. He was very instrumental in you know, helping me get clean and sober. He did what the term the 12th step on me back in 87. And so that's very important that I kind of acknowledge that, you know, and let people know how, you know, like I say, my dad term, he saved my life, as a matter of fact, coming in and talking to me. He was the first cat I knew that was in recovery that didn't turn into a square.
Well put. Yeah, far from
and,
it. Far
and
from
so, it. You know, so it so I'm writing that. I've probably got about 3/4 of it done.
Do you have a title yet?
Not really. I've no, I don't.
You might have something in mind, but you're not ready.
Yeah,
to,
not ready to put that
yeah,
out there.
Well, I
yet,
hear that. You know? I hear that. Well, I know that a lot of people are going to be excited to hear that you're working on it.
Yeah.
And they'll be saving their pennies now.
And it's kind of one of those things where it's not just all about me. I kind of talk about, you know, every once in a while I go out to colleges and folk festivals and I'll do these workshops about songwriting and kind of what how it was important to me and, you know, talk about inspiration and craft. And removing your fear and doubt, and so I've kind of got some where it's not like a self-help book, but it's just kind of or an instruction book, but it's just kind of like what I did in order to at 40 years old I was kind of I didn't have a career, you know, I mean I really didn't. I was playing at Charlie's Airport Lounge on Mockingbird at Love Field between the lingerie shows. And this was a place where these you didn't want to see the lingerie show sober. I mean, it was a rough gig. I mean, that's where I'd taken it because of you know drinking and drugging and all that, and then how I kind of you know turned that around and actually became kind of a real songwriter. And so I kind of talk about that, you know, how what I did about what I read and how I kind of set a goal for myself to try to do this.
We're talking with Ray Riley Hubbard. He is the curator of this terrific Grit and Groove.
Does that mean I have to clean up after this?
Yeah, curator is a big word, but this has really gotten to be quite a tradition. The number four, is that right?
Yeah, number four.
Grit and Groove Fest, don't miss out. Terrific lineup. And I know you have a website, Grit and Groove Fest.
Gritandgroovefest.com.
There you go.
Yeah.
Ray Riley Hubbard, it's good to see you.
I want to mention, too, just real quick, if I can, that that night, the first 50 people about 2 o'clock, I'm going to be giving away Ray Riley Hubbard T-shirts.
Cool.
Not the ones with my name on it, just some that I don't wear anymore. They're mostly black.
What time do things get started? We need to set up a line right now.
2 o'clock.
2 o'clock. All right. So you've been warned. Good to see you again,
David,
Ray Riley. Thank you
so much. I
appreciate
great
it.
Time.
Well, woman I love is her name Ramona. She kinda looks like Tempest Stormin'. She can dance like a little Egypt. She works down at the snake farm. Snake farm, it just sounds nasty. Snake farm, pretty much is snake farm. It's a reptile house, snake farm.
Texas Music Matters is made possible in part by Lewis Shanks of Texas, offering fine home furnishings since 1945. LewisShanksFurniture.com.
Texas Music Matters is a production of Austin's KUT and KUTX. Our production staff includes Haley Howell, Art Levy, Paul Karuba, and Heidi Mawagde. Join us online at KUTX.org or look us up on Facebook at Texas Music Matters. On behalf of the entire Texas Music Matters team, I'm David Brown, wishing you all the very best from Austin, Texas. Snake farm.
I asked Ramona how come she works there. She says, well, it's got its charm. There's nothing to do in the winter. Now then some kid gets bit at the snake farm. Snake farm, it just sounds nasty. Snake farm, it pretty much is. Snake farm, it's a reptile house. Snake farm. Ah. boxer, malt liquor, and a band from Wales that's called The Alarm. She said she cried when they broke up. She still plays the records at the Snake Farm. Snake Farm, it just sounds nasty. Snake Farm.